Greetings and welcome to the Pure Report. I'm your host, Rob Ludeman. It is time to bring the orange yet again and so quickly with another Unplugged. We're hitting volume 9. JD is here. Andrew is here. And we just rolled one of these last week. And I'm so excited to see both of you again because we've got some great topics to cover today. We're going to do our What's New, but also another Architecture Matters. Andrew, what is happening in your world?
Staying busy, running around. I'm actually home this week after a good bit of travel.
Excellent. JD, how are you, bud?
Just can't get enough of us, can you? We're back again.
I can't. I'm not going to sing this time, though. I'm not going to do Guess Who's Back and sing. We'll save that for karaoke, right?
I wasn't trying to crush your dreams that much, Rob, last time. So apologies. I'll be more encouraging and uplifting and affirming from all episodes forward.
Well, and I don't know if it's dropped as we're recording, but by the time you hear this episode, you will have the opportunity to enjoy the previous episode we just recorded with Anthony Nocentino. Let's get his name right. And I'm really looking forward to everyone hearing that. I think that was a really cool episode.
Yeah, it's up, right? I just popped go on it about an hour or two ago. And so that one is up and live. So as you're listening to this, make sure you catch that one all in and around SQL Server goodness and great tips and tricks. And we're going to hit on some other goodness today, Andrew. I'll turn it over to you.
As always, agenda a little bit shorter. You actually hit on it because it's an easier agenda this time. So a little bit of what's new. Hopefully stuff that we find interesting is interesting to everybody listening. Then we're going to do these for number two. We're going to do another architectural decision. It's going to be about stateless controllers and then continuing on into front end and back end. It's going to get a little bit technical. Stay along for the ride. And then third tip of the week. We're actually making this one a little bit shorter because we had some longer ones previously. But that middle one, number two, around the architectural decisions, that's actually going to be the bulk of this session. What's new, Rob? So section number one, what's new? You're still living in a little bit of conference world, I think, or conference brain, something like that. You know, what's going on?
I know. I updated on the last episode and we just had so many events going. And then eventually I get sucked into some of them, which is great, which is fun. And so I did want to plug that in two and a half weeks here, starting on October 17th, we'll be at Oracle Cloud World in Las Vegas, formerly Oracle Open World, now Oracle Cloud World. Really excited, as some have known from listening to episodes for a while, or if you're newer to the program, I come from that world, spent a number of years at Oracle via the Sun acquisition. So it's going to be fun to get back in and around those people, and always love seeing what Oracle's doing with their database technology and what they're driving into the cloud. And we will have our great Ron Eakins. He's our Oracle ace who works out of Europe, out of the UK, but he's doing a lightning session that we get as part of the sponsorship called A Data Double Play, Escape Ransomware Jail and Automate Your Oracle Data. That title might sound a little familiar to you, Mr. Miller.
I'm hearing ransomware and jail and making bail. And for anyone who doesn't follow Ron, he has a blog at ronekins.com, ronekins.com. An amazing amount of great Oracle stuff. If you love Oracle, it will just make you happy to go read it. And I've sent the links from that a good number of times. He's got another peer, Tom Stutzman as well, who does great stuff on this side of the pond. We've got some Oracle powerhouses on the team.
And Rob, you didn't just call him an ace because he likes Top Gun. That's actually a pretty prestigious recognition in the Oracle community, isn't it?
It's the same as the MVPs in the Microsoft community. So it is a big deal. There's a limited quantity of those. You have to apply every year to get accepted. And there is a requirement of being an ace that you have to show up at user groups and do sessions. You have to do a certain amount of testing and publishing of things. So, you know, while Ron is certainly here at Pure and representing everything we do with Pure, he's really tight and closely connected in with Oracle. So when he shows up at a Cloud World or at a Oracle user group event, he speaks on behalf of a lot of things that we're doing. So certainly, yes, the ransomware piece is interesting, but he spends a lot of time on the automation side, messing around with Ansible, doing things with OVM, Oracle Virtualization Manager, and showing how all that works, and then, you know, putting it on top of the storage as well. So thanks for mentioning that, JD. It's more than just a minor designation. It's actually kind of a big deal.
Not trying to go overboard here, Rob, but I'm just looking at Ron's blog. I'm getting Rob and Ron right this time. So like, you know, one of the most recent posts, manage infrastructure with REST APIs from inside the Oracle database. That's kind of fun. Or even about how you can actually migrate to Active Cluster with Oracle 19c rack online migration for extended or stretched rack clusters. I mean, he's got higher level stuff. He's got lower level stuff. Just phenomenal content.
Yeah, it's all over the map, but really important if you're still running Oracle out there, of which there's tons of people and tons of enterprises still invested in that. It is mission critical. It's been around for so many years because it has all those features that if you're a big enterprise and you need it to stay up and running and protect your most valuable data assets, that is what you're going to be doing. So excited to be there. If you happen to be there, stop by and come say hello to us and pop into Ron's session. And I think that's all for my what's new. I'll kick it back to you, but thanks. It's going to be fun to get on the road and see some of the other Puritans at that event as well.
So what's new for you, JD? I think you've been traveling a little bit, maybe even a little bit. I don't know if it's travel hangover, but you've been like inside the US, you've been outside the US, like JD's everywhere.
You know, I have been. Travel's really picked up for me. I've got some cool trips coming up. I'm going to go to London here soon, about to head out to Nashville. But a recent trip that I made, which is really cool, and I wanted to talk about it, is I actually got the chance to go to São Paulo in Brazil for a little while. Now, we talk a lot about, we think a lot about our US-based teams because you and I are kind of based up here and we're very familiar because as principal technologists, we cover regions around the US and North America. But it was really fantastic to kind of branch out a little bit and get to know our team that supports South America, Latin America. And what they were doing essentially was getting all the team together for the first time, kind of coming out of COVID, the first time they got the entire team together and they were going to do a big SE tech workshop, kind of similar to some stuff that we did last week as kind of a big organization, but in their smaller region. And so I got to meet some really fun folks. Gustavo Yazbek runs that team. Andrew, I know you've had some dealings with Gustavo. Absolutely fantastic to get to meet some new folks, feel the energy that they've got going on. They are incredibly lean and powerful. They've got a massive region to cover and just a handful of folks to do it. And so it was fantastic to meet these folks and get to learn a little bit about more how they approach Pure and some of the things that our customers in different regions are doing. So that was a fantastic trip for me. I won't say I really enjoyed the flight. That was pretty crazy. It was nice. It was nice to see São Paulo and get a new bit of experience there.
What was your routing, man? Because I've done that one where I've had to go all the way to Chicago and then straight down to Brazil. I've done the, through Mexico City or through Dallas or through Miami, which takes a little bit of the time off, but you just don't realize how far south and how far east it is.
Yeah, Seattle to DFW and then DFW to São Paulo was a 9-hour flight.
Yeah, so the haul. But once you get there, you're there. And it's great folks, great people. It's kind of coincidental. We were just talking about Oracle before because there's actually a number of folks that are out of LATAM that used to be there as well. So it's a lot of familiar faces and names that I see that are now here at Pure, which is great.
Yeah. And Andrew, so maybe you can talk about this a little bit. One of the big goals that I had in going down there was to kind of better connect our teams. And I know you've actually had some conversations, even prior to this, but, kind of since we'd had that kickoff, you've worked more with that team to kind of better integrate them into some of the things that we do. Maybe talk a little bit about that for a second, if you can.
Yeah, happy to. So for those who kind of keep track at home, Carl McQuillan is over a good bit of our international organization. And so when Gustavo started, gentleman you mentioned, who's I may be getting his title wrong. You can find it on LinkedIn, but pre-sales director for LATAM. Awesome dude. I've had about a monthly call with him. Basically, it's kind of a technology mentoring. Not that he needs mentoring and like he's a junior sense, but just someone to be kind of like a pointer to this resource or that resource or read this thing or et cetera. So it's been actually really fun. Of some of the core things, some things are just universal as far as Pure and storage and all this kind of stuff. But then there's other things that have a very different play in that region. And so sometimes I'm kind of come with like, I don't know the exact answer, but here's the person I'd go find. So it's actually been fun to kind of have the sense of like both North America, but also the questions that he's getting, he's at being asked and running across. Even as I, that's why I like to keep in touch with my folks in APJ. There's very different dynamics there, even country by country, much less EMEA. Recently have actually peer comment that we run at a team level, kind of a monthly regional update calls. So principal technologist roadmap and strategy update for the folks that we map to geographically. So I've added the LATAM team in. Hopefully I haven't been talking too fast on those, or my peer Rob Glansman, et cetera, because we can both get going sometimes, but have had Gustavo and a bunch of his team members on that. Because even if maybe there's some language questions or terms or other stuff, at minimum, the time zones align. So like, hey, everyone's welcome to join in and hear more stuff, hopefully. And if there's questions, hey, that's always good for follow-up.
Yeah, and really appreciate you doing that. I think that's been, you've done a lot to kind of build a bridge between those parts of the organization, and I think that's been really fantastic. So thank you, Andrew.
It's always fun to learn. That's what makes the role job fun. Sometimes it's tech stuff, it's cultural and technology interactions too, if that makes sense. I'm not trying to like step in any, you know, muddy waters here, challenging stuff, but it's real, you know, different areas of the world. We're all different, you know, and you get to learn that. Okay, I'll jump in then, I think, with a little bit of what's new. So it's been last week. Was actually Tech Summit. So that's an event that our global enablement team runs for pure SEs. I was able to participate in a couple sessions there with one of the early Flasher engineers, with Drew Vernat. We did a deep dive on a life of an IO and architecture pieces for FlashArray. Also did a session on safe mode with Juan Mojica, who's the product manager for those features. But also, I think, JD, I know you were involved. We were chatting during that. I know that Rob Glansman was on it, Zane Allen, Sean Kennedy, basically the whole principal technologist and field solution architect teams. For better or worse, we often get tapped to do a bunch of these. So I think out of 16 hours of sessions, I was presenting for about 8 hours of them. And the one before this, I totally got out of it. So this time, like, I paid my dues. And then maybe the next one, sometimes it's on again, off again a little bit. It's all good, right, kind of thing. But which topics get pulled into. But it's just really fun to see and hear the feedback from folks about session quality. The platform was really good. So just a really good week. I think about as good a virtual enablement event as I've seen in maybe forever, I think. I'm not trying to go over the top, but it was good.
I think so too. Kudos on the platform, right? We won't name the brand, but it worked. It worked really well, this events platform, easy to navigate to what you wanted to. So great work by the enablement team there. And I know Tech Summit has evolved a little bit over the years. I think, you know, a number of years ago, it was an in-person thing that was, you know, tied to some other events that we did, but you did a great job with your sessions. Really fun to see. JD, what'd you think? Did you like it?
You know, it was, I actually got to play, I talked a little bit on the last episode about the new position I took on the team. And so I actually kind of played the new guy card a little bit and said, I'm going to take a step back for this Tech Summit and be more of a cheerleader for everyone on the team who's participating. And so actually it was nice because I got to go drop into a lot of different sessions. And the thing that really stood out to me is the quality and the depth of the content this year really drew me back to some of the content that we were delivering when I first started at Pure. And I was really, really impressed with what, you know, the team had put together. And you know, we talk about this event, I know we have a lot of external listeners, non-Pure listeners that listen to the podcast that unfortunately, for the most part, don't get to participate in this event that we're talking about. But we did actually bring in our Pure Wavemakers this time, which are our partners who have, you know, gone through a program. They because of their contributions at Pure, they get a little bit of a extra access to some of the things that we're doing. They give us some extra levels of feedback. We actually brought them in to this internal set of training and presentations that we had. And I thought that was incredible to kind of bring that group in. If anybody wants to be a part of that, this is a great opportunity to talk to your partner manager, if you're a reseller, about how you might participate in that program.
Yeah, definitely check out Wavemakers. But also I know from seeing these in the past that there's a number of these topics that actually will make their way out externally, right? These will come out either at an Accelerate event or a Flash Crew. I love some of the provocative titles that were used. And so what's really cool is it's almost not a trial balloon, if you will, but there's some topics here that if you just kind of take out some of the internal, you know, the internal instruction part of it, that end up being really interesting for our user community and our partners. So, you know, stay tuned. Some of that stuff may come out.
Think of it as like the beta run, so you get the nice polished version when it finally makes its way to the
field. I was trying not to make it sound like that.
I was going to say intelligent content reuse. That's anything I learned in tech marketing. It's like you have one piece of content and you use the heck out of that thing when it's good. So, you know. Last item, and man, what's new always expands. So was also on the road some last week, actually in between presenting, doing Tech Summit in the morning. I drove down to Atlanta. We had an accelerated road show. Then I drove back at night so that I could have the final ones. This is where time zones are always fun when you're helping with international enablement. But it was great to see both a lot of peer folks, a lot of partners, and a lot of customers as we did one of the final kind of accelerate road shows. One really fun conversation there was actually someone that came up afterwards, and they're with a consulting firm that focuses just on Kubernetes and application development. They're actually in the middle of doing some architecture recommendations for a US agency that you would know the name of. So we were talking about some of that and then connecting them with some people inside Pure. They don't do any storage. They're literally only in Kubernetes and next-gen applications and microservices and all this kind of cool stuff. And they're truly interested in Portworx and making a cornerstone for some of what they're doing. So that was just a non-traditional but really fun conversation to have as well. You probably saw if you're watching on LinkedIn, we had Accelerate New York, which was kind of a tier one global event style event, although our field marketing team and global events did a huge amount of work on that. The best way I know to describe it is that you had the executive presence and coverage in New York. This is Charlie and Kaz and Kevin Kreiser, like CFO, CEO, co-founder, you know, like the folks that you would normally expect to see at the Banner Conference in LA or San Francisco. They were also in New York as well and doing a lot of sessions and even just frankly being really accessible. One of the enterprise sales district managers, Adam Apps, or sales directors, was talking about, you know, how he was like, Kevin Kreisler is in some ways just a normal guy. And that's a compliment. Like, you let him grab him and he was just chatting with a customer, had some questions about Pure's financials, and he was there. And obviously he's not always that accessible because he's pretty busy. But at the same time, like, you know, he can just talk to people off the cuff. So it was really neat to hear some stories about that. Go check out LinkedIn and you can actually find a bunch of pictures around that too. I think with that, I'm going to move it into section number two, because I mean, there's always so much good stuff. But we are continuing to explore the 15 architectural decisions. So far, we've run through built-in simplicity, architecture at scale, consumer NAND, data reduction, stateless controllers, and then we actually jumped a little bit last week because we wanted to give more time for Anthony. You hopefully have heard that by now if you're listening to this one. We talked about streamlined code paths. The one that we skipped, actually, and if you listen to the coffee break that JD and I did back in April, where you can actually see the slide that shows the 15 architectural decisions, you might have noticed that what we skipped over, we're going to come back to today, is the idea of not just the controllers being stateless, that's decision number five, but this very intentional design around them being front-end, active-active, and back-end, active-standby. Which means that when someone asks, are your controllers active-active or active-standby or active-passive or whatever term we like to use, the answer is, I can't answer that yes-no question without a longer explanation, which is a classic consulting answer. It depends, you know, kind of.
It depends.
What does it depend on? What are the factors? Like, dig into that. So, but because we actually blur those traditional lines in some really intentional ways. So this goes together with number five that we covered. Go back and listen to that about stateless controllers. You know, nothing of the configuration or identity is stored in the controller. That helps with replacing failed controllers and, you know, eases technology transitions. But where we stopped last time was in this magical world where you can shut a storage array off, take the controllers out, put the new controllers in. It's stateless, right? We didn't get to the next step of application owners don't like downtime. Nor do they like performance impact when you're doing upgrades. Because I'm gonna imagine, Rob, for all the Oracle background that you've had, it's totally fine to have reduction in performance during upgrades, right? Any time of the day. Yeah.
Everybody loves reduction in performance in general, right? Combine that with downtime, you've got a winning combination.
I feel like we're in opposite land. This is where I'm gonna channel Calvin and Hobbes a little bit, like opposite ball, you know.
Bizarro land. Calvin Bizarro. Ball.
Okay, so this is where, and actually, I think I'll keep going for a second. So there's a little bit of a fun story here about how Pure started out with the FA300 line. And if you look at the history there, this was a single controller platform. The performance was good enough that people, transformational performance, it's over the top buzzwords, I know, but like, you know, 10, 20 time X the performance and IOPS and dramatic reductions in latency and maybe originally targeted some workloads that could handle it, VDI or otherwise, you build in resiliency or you have ephemeral data sets, okay? But Pure started out as a single controller. The plan was always to go to resiliency at a controller level. But when we did that, there is this decision point about how do you add in the second controller while maintaining simplicity and adding resilience. I think I'll toss it over to you, JD. I went long enough and I need a drink of water.
it's a great conversation, and it's one that, you know, I actually played with a little bit in a previous life, competing with Pure, because let's think about it. Let's take it at a high level. If I've got two controllers working for me, shouldn't that be twice as much performance? Well, maybe not always. There's a couple other factors in there, right? We've got to actually have dual ported media that can talk to two different controllers at the same time, but that's also kind of a solved problem too. But now I'm getting into what kind of efficiencies do I get from scaling out my architecture to be able to have multiple sets of compute resources that are doing this work for me? And, you know, hopefully I kind of hinted right there in as I was walking through that scale out, there are certain workloads that benefit really nicely from a scale-out architecture, aren't there? There are workloads where if I can have a lot of different workers from a storage perspective all engaged at the same time, I can really start to drive performance. I can really start to drive efficiency, right?
I feel like the FlashBlade team paid you a solid $20. And we're going to talk about FlashBlade now. Actually not, but that whole scale out thing, it actually fits in this conversation too. It's a scale out or a scale up, or maybe scale out only to two controllers, or do you keep going more? Brief overview when we're talking about this, and I'm looking to make sure I'm not cutting you off too much. Okay. Is when we talk about this, what Pure has done fundamentally, let's just describe what it is, and then we'll play out all the impacts and even the where the five year ago Andrew and the 5 year ago JD, you know, we've both learned and matured in our careers and we've been through different places. So we're talking about that on the front end, it's active. Every single port is active. Every single port on a flash array can take IO. And so all devices should be hopefully balanced across all ports with no individual port ownership kind of thing. This means that you don't need software that does advanced multipathing stuff and figures that out. It simplifies things on the host side. It also means there's not like device to initiate or mapping. This is also enabled by Pure having a single internal global queue, right? So it doesn't actually kind of matter which port it comes in. Yes, there's queues everywhere, but it all merges into one global queue internally. But on the back end, it is what I like to call, you know, kind of optimistically, active standby. What this means is that on the back end, there is reservation of compute resources on one of the controllers. And the short version of this, and then we'll expand it a lot, is this is what gives you no performance impact during planned or unplanned controller failover. It also means no tuning or balancing required to avoid performance reductions when you're in failover mode. Okay, that's the super short, just kind of a little bit of just the facts, ma'am, you know, kind of version, if you will. That has been, interestingly enough, I think one of the major points of contention or competitive discussions at times, JD, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is the point I was kind of getting to a little bit, is there are certainly workloads that are designed for a scale out architecture. And we have some tools for that, and we'll get to that. But really, when we think about FlashArray, what are our typical workloads? What are they most interested in? It's generally latency, right? So if I think about that, now I come through from a competitive perspective. I say, okay, well, if I push that aside and I just assume that all workloads scale out linearly as I add more CPUs, then I might make an argument, something to the effect of, hey, my array that's front end all the time, active, and back end active. Well, hey, on its worst day, when it loses one of those controllers, isn't it just as good at Pure on your best day when you're only leveraging one of those controllers that you have available?
I love it. This is where we're keeping it real, you know, because that's what I might have said in the past, because I've been other places, you know, too, kind of thing. You're looking at like, So this is where, to me, there's this interesting intentional design, because we could have taken some of that approach 8-10 years ago. And I mean, kind of the royal we in this case, because it's not like you and I were here making these decisions that long ago. This goes back to Kaz and the engineering team, et cetera. But any time that we look at an architecture, sometimes when I'm trying to be a little bit, you know, a little bit provocative, is architecture is about what we waste. whether I'm designing a storage controller, I'm doing architecture in the sense of when I was on the partner side and you're architecting out Site Recovery Manager with storage and VMware, et cetera, or let's say, what are you optimizing for? Mm-hmm. So and I've been here where I used to actually watch storage controllers and make sure they didn't go above 50%. The command there, bonus points for anyone who wants to reply to me on Twitter with what controller this is, because I'm not picking pot shots, but it's real. I used to run systat-x-s(1), and I could see my controller balancing kind of thing. Or I'm thinking of even in a previous life where I'd architect stuff, and I had a little chart that I'd look at that would say, okay, you've got all these features in the array, that's cool, but if you're past 50%, you shouldn't use this feature, or this thing will kind of turn off or tune down. Well, why? Well, because if one of the controllers goes offline and we're both are running at 60%, 60 plus 60 equals 120, aka more than 100. This is easy math day, I know, kind of thing. So, you know, unless percentages sometimes make my head hurt. So there's the idea there of what happens when something goes offline and what are our failure scenarios and how much human overhead does it take? So this is where I'm just going to, you know, if it's two controllers, we can make a case that letting part of the resources sit idle on the back end, we're going to waste something in general. Are we going to waste human time monitoring it? Are we going to waste remediation time when something goes offline? Because now we've got to scramble and watch for that. But what about even if we have planned scenarios where we want to make promises about we can upgrade things without disruption? That there's no magic there. You got to handle it some way architecturally, you know, kind of thing. Back to you.
You know what, Andrew, I can't help but wonder, and I'm going to throw you a curveball a little bit here. This isn't in the notes, but I can't, as we're talking about this, I can't help but wonder if this really draws some parallels to some of the disaster recovery scenarios that we talk about. You and I both talk a lot about backup scenarios, data resiliency scenarios. And I know there was certainly a time where we would say, oh, for my DR site, I don't plan to use that as much. So I'm gonna put older hardware there, cheaper hardware there. I'm gonna and somehow give it less capability because it's less important to me. But I feel like as businesses have grown in the way they use data, we've really come to this realization that no, we're a real time world, and even in those kind of failure scenarios, I need 100% of the capability that I would have during steady state, right? And so we've really, well, I'd love to get your opinion on this, but I feel like we've really started to grow as a culture of saying, no, I need that same level of experience regardless of where my operations are running. And I've kind of moved into this situation where I'm really exercising both of those. There's no longer a concept of primary and disaster recovery. It's just two primary that I alternate back and forth. And we draw some of the same parallels to what we're doing in a two controller architecture where I need those same set of capabilities no matter what happens to really prepare for that.
So I'm going to go back to it was a fun moment sitting at Accelerate. I was live blogging and tweeting my heart out, and I'm always tired at the end of those, but I remember very clearly Renee from Delta, senior vice president, et cetera. I'm going to get his title wrong, but he was up on stage with Prakash, who's a senior leader at Pure, for those who don't know Prakash Darji. And he said at the beginning of the interview on stage, live streamed, hey, I'm going to go off script a little bit here, which is like, you know, what's going to happen? And he said, I just want to let you know that originally I bought into Pure just for the maintenance costs, that we have, you know, flat maintenance that's partly based on not having higher failure rates in years 4, 5, and 6. But at a financial level, it's super easy to understand, you know, kind of thing like, hey, instead of my maintenance spike in year 4 and 5 and 6. And he said, and then I realized later, and I'm going to get the time a little bit wrong here. You know, 9-12 months later, I realized we were doing array upgrades, software and hardware upgrades with planes in the air, because Delta always has planes in the air, right? You know, kind of thing. They run 24/7 kind of thing as far as something's in the air. And so I'm actually tying that back into that for them. The expectation is it doesn't matter if it's a planned upgrade, an unplanned upgrade, unless you can know that that performance is going to be consistent. Now you're into the scenarios of you're constantly migrating data on and off, you're doing soft downtime windows, all this kind of stuff that moving into maybe let's just call it a 24/7 culture. If I pull up my banking app at 2 a.m. in the morning because that's when I'm awake and want to do my bill pay for somebody, I want to do it right then, you know, kind of thing. So there's not, I even remember working at a university, every now and then I could bounce servers, restart servers during lunchtime. I feel like that world is long gone.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, we had Anthony on last week, and he made the comment relative to database operations, stop making users sad. And I think, you know, these are the types of things that make users sad, or the people I've run into at conferences that have talked about, you know, having to come in on the weekend and orchestrate tens of people to figure out these outage windows and all these things. And you don't have to do that. That's just a win. And geez, what, I can't think of a better example than having to keep a bunch of airplanes up in the air, like Delta does, but you know, every business is online 24/7 now. So you got to have that. And the fact that this architectural decision enablement is super powerful. Those are things that drive DBAs and app owners crazy, is when they don't have access to what they need.
Even playing out, what is the relative cost? And let's be real, you can look at Pure's public reports, and Pure's margins look more like a software company than a hardware company. So I'm going to wander back to that sense of architecture is about what we choose to waste. CPU is not relatively the most expensive thing there, especially compared to the NAND flash. Maybe it was relative to, you know, back in the days of disk. So if we're going to plan, or let's say what we optimize around, that's the more optimistic way to say it. Let's optimize around uptime, around availability, around the human overhead of watching these things all the time, right? That's what it makes, at least today, more sense to optimize around. And this is where I won't say the decisions that Pure has made would have been the right decisions 20 or 30 years ago. But I'm very comfortable that they're the right decisions today. And even in that, you know, I've been in a world where you've got to troubleshoot multipathing and, you know, more intelligent queuing stuff. You take some of that out from an operational complexity side because all the ports are native. And in the past, I would say round robin equals one. There's newer terms from a vSphere standpoint or multipathing. But there's complexity pieces there that just go away. And we've done a good bit of testing, and this regularly happens during when customers do proof of concepts or POCs of, you know, do a software upgrade, yank a controller out, yank a cable out, an SFP out, you know, the different pieces that you would expect to see some level of performance impact. And I'm not going to say you don't notice at all when you look at the charts, but it's enough that it's not a major item that you have to do major planning around, kind of thing.
We've done that publicly in the past too, though, right? I mean, you get the ESG lab validation reports, and you can, I mean, we're in the midst of working on one of those right now, but in the past we've had those where, you know, that's part of the array being in production in the wild, is they'll come and they'll start pulling things out and see what happens. And you get that performance degradation, or do you have latencies that are unacceptable? And no, we don't.
The other piece there is this was not an easy decision. This isn't like we just took the easy way out. This was actually kind of hard to do as well. JD.
And I think it really, you've done a good job of highlighting how it connects back to our Evergreen messaging, which if we think about it is really one of the foundational messages that we build almost everything we do on top of, right? And a big part of that, yes, is the ability to non-disruptively add new capabilities, both in terms of software and hardware, to environment. Yes, that's absolutely part of it. But another part of it that we talk a lot about is really changing how customers operationalize their environment. Thinking more about how do we build solutions that, regardless of where they live, your data center or otherwise, give you those capabilities that really the major hypervisors, the public cloud providers, have conditioned us to expect. And you don't typically expect from one of those major hypervisors, oh, by the way, your environment's going to go offline for a little while. And so really foundationally, these capabilities not only give us, you know, more seamless upgrades, yeah, that's important, but it really pushes that narrative around rethinking operationalizing of storage and infrastructure.
What's fun there is this is one that we can take from a technical discussion and pull it all the way up the stack. So let's go back 10 years ago, first FlashArray is coming out, or thereabouts. There weren't necessarily plans for unified file. There weren't necessarily plans for active cluster, for synchronous replication. These are things that have overhead on the controller. So unless you have a platform that first is built from a standpoint of, I can actually not only make it stateless, but I can actually know that I'll be able to regularly upgrade the controllers. And then we build that at a business model level too, with periodically new controllers baked into the subscriptions. Or if it's full consumption based, you know, we can do that too with Evergreen One or Evergreen Flex, et cetera. But that enabling piece of the stuff that may come out in 3, 4, 5 years from a software standpoint, that we can overall keep moving our fleet up and up and up, means that we can offer those features to customers and they can actually take advantage of them And if it's not, if it's disruptive to get to that stuff, then it's always this decision point about, I need new controllers, not because it just from a CPU and a RAM standpoint. So there's this underlying substrate of allowing new software features to be used and even kind of dreamed about at an engineering level, because you know the fleet will move that direction over time to work and take advantage of it. I think with that, we are good on this. I'm actually just scanning back through. There's one other piece here. I know there's something else we want to pull in. So there's also been the question sometimes of how big do we build from a blast radius standpoint. So obviously we've been tracking the Pure Array. That's expanded recently. So Flash Array X for a while. The blast radius from a per terabyte standpoint expanded with Flash Array C. Those boxes can get really big. It's also expanded with Flash Array XL, which maintains the same latency and profile as a Flash Array X, but they get bigger and badder, you know, XL 130, 170 for all the same software. But there's also this thing of like, how big do you want a single blast radius to be? And you may don't necessarily want that to be insanely huge, but as you do change those choices, you can actually seamlessly navigate there. And even Active Cluster and Fusion builds on that a little bit. I think that blast radius thought it was originally yours, JD.
Yeah, no, I think you did a really good job of kind of encapsulating that, though, is that there are definitely other ways that we build that resiliency. We think about this controller architecture as designed to give us this fault tolerance in case we lose a component. It's not designed to give us that additional capability. We have things like Active Cluster, Active DR. We've really made our portfolio incredibly robust in how we build out those capabilities and giving us that resiliency in other ways. And to go back to, you know, a comment that you made about CPU, right? That's usually not the most expensive component in this architecture. And especially now that we have FlashArray XL, we can make those even larger, right? So even within that one controller, we can get incredibly large in terms of the capability that we're bringing, the CPU resources and that we're bringing to this environment. So, you know, I think we've set ourselves up for, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back too much here, but I think we've done a pretty good job of kind of keeping ahead of that curve to make sure that we're really allowing customers to see the benefits there.
That also is what enabled Active Cluster to basically just expose more paths and allow transparent migrations at a block level, which is really cool. So that's almost a whole Active Cluster architecture builds off the controller architecture as even a get out of jail free card when you need to non-disruptively move workloads around. When you may not have storage vMotion in play, because that's the ultimate data migration get out of jail free card. You can use that too, or you can do it at a controller level. I feel like we'll probably pull the Active Cluster as we keep going, but I'm gonna move into section number 3, which is the tip of the week. So, this is about safe mode, or it's about snapshots, or it's about ransomware, or take your pick. So snapshot sizing related to safe mode and ransomware. So quickly, for those hopefully, in case you're not aware, when we talk about safe mode is the ability to protect against malicious data deletion scenarios. It's where, heaven forbid, someone actually has access at an administrative level to Pure systems. Hope that's not the case, but if they do, we can actually prevent them from doing the final removal of data. We've got a good bit of content out there. Now, if you don't have points in time to go back to, though, snapshots, it's a little bit of like you've got an amazing safe inside your house, but you don't have, you know, but you don't have a lock on your front door. I borrowed that analogy from Juan Mojica, FlashArray product manager that was working with a session on this last week. So that was during actually a session last week where we're continuing to move on this. Safe mode is a collection of features that helps with malicious data deletion protection and moving. We keep moving it toward higher levels of default protection. So step number one there is please think about turning safe mode on. But I think, JD, you actually even had a partner that you were chatting with that it felt like encapsulated this a little bit.
Well, and actually, this is a partner that's coming to Pure for the first time relatively recently, and I just thought it was fascinating that one of the things that drew them to us was they had a very personal experience where a customer of theirs had been attacked, and that attacker was using ransomware methodologies to go after their environment and try to hold their data hostage. And in this particular environment, this was not on Pure, by the way. This was on a different storage environment, but it was a different storage environment that had snapshots, and those snapshots saved the day for this customer. And so everything was great. We were able to recover. Customer didn't have to go and pay the ransom, but it really cemented in this partner's mind how close they got to total disaster. If just one more system had been compromised, if their storage, if the attacker had gotten access to that critical capability of those snapshots, it would have been game over, right? And that's all it was. It was purely credentials that was standing between this customer and complete disaster. And so understanding that we had the ability to take that really powerful concept, that extra step, is something that pushed them over the edge in terms of thinking about strategically partnering with Pure. And I thought that was a fantastic example.
I'm thinking of one customer where the day after the storage admin went on vacation, the attackers got in, and later found out likely they'd been pushed via the help desk, a keylogger to the storage admin's machine. That's a super realistic scenario of how you get the admin credentials, right? And not even bad hygiene on the storage admin's fault. I mean, obviously the attackers got in somehow. So if we're real though, if we look at reasons that people might not have enabled safe mode, or it's taken them more time to enable safe mode, it's sometimes around the sizing for snapshots. Safe mode protects snapshots and the things that you might use to recover, right, kind of thing. There's no such thing as safe mode snapshots. There's snapshots protected by safe mode. So our Pure One team and our FlashArray team have done awesome work working together to help with answering some of those questions. Because before, if you ask me, how much space do snapshots take? I usually have a couple answers. One is, you know, it's on average 15, 20, 25% fleet wide when we look at the average retention. That just helps you know snapshots don't take double the space, kind of thing, right? What it is for you could vary. We have great stuff in our sizer tool that SEs can use and partner SEs can use around change rates. And then often what we'll often tell people is, you know, your data is unique. So you can turn snapshots on because they don't have performance overhead and kind of see what it looks like. But what we now do, and this is the actual tip after all the preamble, is you can go into Pure One and see, you can simulate snapshot policies. It says parenthesis safe mode, because that's often why people may be coming in here to do this, right, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you can actually start to see what various snapshot policies would mean from a space overhead standpoint. This was actually a lot of hard work on the FlashArray side, because some of that space accounting stuff, it's not as high priority as like servicing read and write IO. That's what makes sense, right? So they had to work with some of the innards around tracking the metadata more, not more accurately, but more in real time, as well as then working with the Pure One team. Now, full disclosure, this is the first version of this feature out there. So there are some scenarios, you can read it when you go look in Pure One, you know, about what versions it applies to and some other items. Yes, that's in version 2 and version 3, stuff they're working on. But we actually erred on the side of, let's get this out sooner. Because I don't know about you, JD, but the number of SEs that I've had ask me about this over the years it's pretty high.
You know, this is such a cool feature, and we do a lot of work on the PT team in fielding RFEs, request for enhancements from the field. And, you know, most of those come directly from suggestions that our customers have made. But this is one that I think in large part was really driven by our system engineering community. They said, look, our customers are asking for our help in sizing some of these things. There's potentially some really complex math here, just because we do so much in terms of data reduction through dedupe and through how clones don't actually take up additional space. And so it can actually be really complex to try to calculate this. And so having these tools available to, yes, certainly make our customers' lives easier, but to make our specialists in the field, to make their job a little bit easier, allow them to provide some additional service, I thought that was incredible. You made a good point. It's first version. If you log in and you don't see this available to you in Pure One, hang tight. We're expanding it. It's probably going to be coming soon. But I love that we were able to get this out there for our customers.
There's a silver line to every cloud, or lemons out of lemonade, or whichever analogy you want. But this might just be a silver lining out of ransomware, because we've wanted to do stuff like this for a while. Every time you look at roadmaps, it's a little bit of a zero-sum game. You do this, you don't do this other thing. So ironically, the increased use of snapshots, because ransomware turns into a mass restore scenario where there's nothing faster than metadata, actually was one of the things that helped justify driving this feature in the time, even though we've wanted to do it for a really long time. Mm-hmm. Rob.
I would like to challenge us to get somebody as a special guest for one of our next episodes around Pier 1. I don't know if that relates to any of the architectural decisions we would potentially have coming up, but there's so much good stuff going on there, right? As you're highlighting here, just kind of the connections into that. And I don't worry, but I think there's a lot there that we could expose. So let's contemplate that for one of the next ones we've got.
I mean, I'm even going back to the December, January coffee break with Kyle Keller, where he took a leap of faith and did a live demo of Pier 1. And one of the things you can do in there is you could say, I'm on this controller. What does it look like if I go to this next controller without crunching a bunch of data and saying stuff in manually? Those kind of things, questions are more common if it's not a big deal to upgrade your controllers, which links back to the decision we just talked about. Like, it's very true. Why not do that? So some of the stuff that's actually surfaced in Pier 1, we've created the demand for out of the architecture. So love it, Rob.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll get to thinking. I got a couple ideas there that we can pull on.
So let's string a couple of, because we've actually got a few of these tip of the week over time now. So let's string a few together. You know, first one, go size for snapshots, understand the impact it's going to have. Tip two, turn them on. And tip three, protect them with safe mode.
That's
it. Shazam.
We planned that, right?
Absolutely, 100%.
Or it's almost like, this is like subconscious. I don't know about y'all, but there are times where I talk enough for a living where I say something and then 10 seconds later, I was like, ooh, there is a double meaning there. And usually they aren't too bad, but every now and then the subconscious brain is working faster than your forebrain, you know, kind of thing.
It does.
I think with that, we are at the end of another unplugged episode. I think I talked myself out. JD, anything else you want to add before Rob brings us home?
You know, I'm looking forward to the next episode. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the global strategy and solutions team, what we do. Really excited and looking forward to that. So hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please tune in next time. And we're going to talk about something very near and dear to my heart.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to get time with you. Not only, of course, do I love hearing what you talk about and always learn something, but I really enjoy you as people. And so getting to spend time with you is just is fantastic. It's a highlight of the day when we are able to record these. So I appreciate your time as well, because I know you have day jobs and this is a little bit ancillary to that, but also something that I know you enjoy doing. It's fun to make podcasts. It really is. And for you out there, hopefully it's fun to listen to podcasts, and we're delighted we're able to bring this out to you and hope you took away something that you can learn from today, whether you work for Pure or whether you're working in the IT space. But with that, we will go ahead and wrap up. Thank you for listening, and please share with a colleague. Please send us feedback too at purereport@purestorage.com. That is the email address. If you want to check us out, send a note, send some topics, whatnot. We always love to hear from you. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap. For Pure Storage, the entire crew here, JD Wallace, Andrew Miller, and I saying, don't look back, something might be gaining on you.